want to thank everyone for coming. Mazel tov and everybody for the siyum. We should be safe to finish. We shas and mirat Hashem, but one masechta at a time. I wanted to thank everyone for coming. Especially wanted to thank Rabbi Schechter for agreeing to speak to everybody here in the kollel tonight. I personally consider Rabbi Schechter a Rebbe of mine. For the thousands of hours that I travel in the car, I make sure to hear Rabbi Schechter's over 1,000 shiurim on YU Torah. If you don't have the YU Torah app, I suggest that you download it so you'll be able to be nana from the tremendous amount of Torah that's on the app, and you have the ability to be able to learn a lot of things that you didn't know. And it's a shame, it should be a wonderful experience for everybody. So I wanted to thank Rabbi Schechter for speaking. You'll be able to enjoy over his 1,000 shiurim on YUTorah.org. And I want to just make sure everyone has proper attention to Rabbi Shai Schechter Shlita.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's okay. So good evening, everybody. I'm thrilled to be here. I don't know what the minig normally is. Do you like to look along? Do people like to learn along? Yeah. Just listen? I don't know. Everyone has every right to fall asleep whenever you want, walk out whenever you want. They told me that because we started a little bit late, we have a few extra minutes over the normal time. Normally 9:05, they said 9:15, but whenever everybody's ready to stop, that's okay with me. I really want to thank Rav Moshe Dov for giving me this opportunity. I really am not that often here in Brooklyn, and it's a schus to come out to Brooklyn, certainly to share some Divrei Torah and to learn together with everybody tonight. And what a Kiddush Hashem! What a Kiddush Hashem to be here as part of a simcha, of a siyum, and to participate with all of you in an evening of learning. So as we know, we are all experiencing the 9 days, the 3 weeks. It's already into Rosh Chodesh Av. And it's an opportunity for us to recalibrate. It's an opportunity for us to remind ourselves about Churban Beis Hamikdash, about Eretz Yisrael, about Yerushalayim, about all that it's supposed to mean to us in our lives. And I really always use this opportunity in my shul. I'm in the Young Israel of Woodmere, so it's a little bit of a different community. But I always feel that this time of year is an opportunity for us to remind ourselves of how central the focus of Eretz Yisrael needs to be. And why is it that it's so central to our lives? What is it that we're supposed to be thinking about as we approach the experience of Tisha B'Av and the 9 days in general? So let's begin with an amazing Gemara, the end of Maseches Pesachim, where the Gemara tells us in Kuf Yud Tes Siman Aleph. A fascinating story. The Gemara there says, Moshe Rabbeinu is the Adon HaNaviim. Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, Lo Kam B'Yisrael K'moshe. There was nobody who was comparable to Moshe Rabbeinu. He was above and beyond the level of Nevuah than anybody else. There was no one who could come close. And although Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the greatest Navi, and Moshe Rabbeinu had the closest connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Moshe Rabbeinu led the Jewish people for so many years, all of that, the Gemara tells us a fascinating story at the very end of days. Asad HaKadosh Baruch Hu lasa suda la tzadikim. The Gemara says, in the end of time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make a suda la tzadikim. And what exactly does it mean? I don't know. But at face value, it seems to be that there's going to be some gala celebration, some feast, a festivity, everyone's going to come together. And the Gemara then says they're going to be faced with a problem at the end of this great celebration. What's the problem? As we know, they're going to have to bench Birchas HaMazon. So they're going to come to Birchas HaMazon. Now what happens when we bench Birchas HaMazon? Normally you have one person who makes the mezumin and everybody else participates. The problem is this is going to be a suda la tzadikim. So who's going to be there? All the tzadikim. And that's an issue. Because we're going to have Hillel and Shammai, we're going to have Abai and Rava, Ravina and Ravashi, and we're going to have the Rashba and the Ramban, and the Ravid and the Rambam, and Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, and Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Ramah, and we're going to have the Shach and the Taz and the Mechastinu, Rabbi Kiva Eger. Who's going to bench? What are we going to do? Now obviously everybody's looking around the room trying to figure out who's going to bench, and then they all come to the realization, hey, Moshe Rabbeinu's here, of course he's going to be the one to bench. And all eyes on Moshe Rabbeinu. They all turn to him and they say, okay, Tul Baruch, you should be the one to bench Mezumah. Moshe Rabbeinu turns back to them and he says something very surprising. He says, I cannot bench. Why? Because as much as I may have accomplished in my life, as much as I may have done, and the levels of Nevuah I have gotten to, there is something that is lacking, there's something that's deficient in the life that I live. How can it be? What's deficient in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu? And the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu himself says, because I never had the schus to go into Eretz Yisrael, lo b'chayi, v'lo b'mosi. I never had the schus to be in Eretz Yisrael when I was alive, or subsequent, after I died, I wasn't even allowed entry into the land of Eretz Yisrael, and because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu feels that there's something lacking in his personality. Now, what does that tell us about Eretz Yisrael? What does that tell us about the greatness of being in Eretz Yisrael, of having the opportunity, and it's such a gift, It's such an opportunity that our generation has to be a part of the life of the dream that our grandparents, our great-grandparents only dreamt of, only thought about. Nobody imagined it would be a reality, but we have the opportunity to be a part of the experience of Eretz Yisrael, either in a larger way, in a small way, to visit or to take in the Kedushas HaAretz. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't take that for granted. Understand that that is what made me, Moshe Rabbeinu, deficient in my life, because I didn't have that source. We look at a comment of the Sefer Charedim when he writes, the Sefer Charedim was written at the same time as Rabbi Yosef Karo. He lived with all the Mekubalim in Tzfat. And the Sefer Charedim writes, V'tzarech kolish Yisrael lechabe v'seretz Yisrael. He writes, if you look here on number Aleph, every Jew needs to feel a sense of love, of connection to Eretz Yisrael. V'lavo elam e'afzai aretz. And we should travel to Eretz Yisrael from all the different places in the world. B'tshuka gedola. You ever have anybody in here as a child and you ever went to a big department store, you went to a mall, and inevitably a child gets lost, it happens. Happens even to the greatest of parents. And then you hear that announcement that you never want to hear. You know, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, we have your child at the security desk, we're looking for you, and you're mortified and whatever, but you got to go, and you're running and you're looking, and the kid is hysterical, crying, and you hear them from far away, you hear them screaming, Mommy, Daddy, Abba, Ima, Tati, and you finally see them. And the child comes rushing out to you and starts hugging and embracing and kissing. Writes the Sefer Charedim, Kiven el Cheik Imo. What is our relationship with Eretz Yisrael supposed to be? It's supposed to be like that child that's standing at the security desk, never knowing if they're going to see the parent again, terrified. And yet they have this warm and loving embrace. They come together. That's the feeling we're supposed to have when we reconnect, when we reunite with Eretz Yisrael as well. And he says, the reason for this is because the problem that Klal Yisrael faced in the beginning of the infant stages of Klal Yisrael was Vayimasa be'eretz chemda. We had an issue with Eretz Yisrael when we sent them Meraglim and we had an inappropriate reaction, the wrong kind of response. And as a result of that, we are still paying the price. Now, why is it that we want to have the experience of being in Eretz Yisrael? What's it all about? Is it because Eretz Yisrael has such amazing restaurants? Is it because they have such an amazing spa and they have beautiful arrangements for us to enjoy our vacation? Is that what it's all about? So the Gemara asks, why did Moshe Rabbeinu pleading with his life to go into Eretz Yisrael? What's the big deal? So you don't go into Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara asks, "B'pnei man esav Moshe." So Gemara in the beginning of Masechta Sota, the first parak, Yud Dalad Manala, for the Gemara says, why was Moshe Rabbeinu so insistent? Why was he so eager to go into Eretz Yisrael? B'chi lechem miper yutzarif. Did Moshe Rabbeinu have an insatiable desire? Was he craving to just have the fruits of the land? Is that what it was all about? The RC Cola, right? They don't serve the soda that we're drinking here. What did Moshe Rabbeinu want? What was so important about being in Eretz Yisrael? Obviously, it wasn't the food. There's better food in Chutz La'aretz, sometimes. So what was the issue? Says the Gemara, at least Bal Mituva, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to go to the spa. He wanted to go to all the natural resorts, to the springs that they have there. What did he want? And the Gemara says, no. Kach Amar Moshe Rabbeinu said, Har b'mitzvos estabi Yisrael b'miskayim in ele b'Eretz Yisrael. We have so many mitzvahs that can only be performed in Eretz Yisrael. And as much as I may have done in my life, I'm not able to perform the mitzvahs atluyos b'aretz. And because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I want the schus of going into Eretz Yisrael, that I should be able to have the opportunity of performing mitzvahs. And what you see from that is, being in Eretz Yisrael is not about an ideology, it's not about politics, it's about understanding the schus that we have to perform the mitzvahs atluyos b'aretz. And you see it so clearly in the Chumash. Look at this pasuk together in Sefer Dvarim. V'atah Yisrael shma l'chukim el ha'mishpatim asher anochi milamed eschem l'asos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of us to follow all the mitzvahs HaTorah. L'man tichyu, in order that you should live. U'basam yirishtam asa'aretz, and then you will come into Eretz Yisrael asher Hashem Elokei Avoseichem nosem lachem. The Chizkuni writes, again in the 13th century, the Chizkuni, one of the most important Mefarshim on Chumash, writes, what does the Torah mean to say here? And it's clear from the formulation of this pasuk that this is conditional. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you want to have the opportunity, u'basam yirishtam asa'aretz, you want to have the opportunity to live in Eretz Yisrael, to inhabit, to be zocha to the land of Eretz Yisrael. It's all conditional on the first part. Shema el achukim v'el ha'mishpatim. Eretz Yisrael is only deserving to the Jewish people if they make sure to remind themselves, Shema el achukim v'el ha'mishpatim, that we have to also follow all the mitzvahs HaTeluyos Ba'aretz and all the mitzvahs for that matter. And in fact, the Rishali writes the same idea. Why is it? It's interesting. The second bracha in the Birchas HaMazon, we're all eating here, is Sudas Mitzvah. The second bracha in Birchas HaMazon is, Ala Oretz, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Eretz Yisrael. Now we thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for Eretz Yisrael. Think about the bracha. No delecha al shem chatan avoseinu. Thank you for giving Eretz Yisrael to our ancestors. Okay, very nice. Al Torascha Shelimad Etanu. How does that fit in? What does that have to do with anything? Why is that part of the Shvach of Eretz Yisrael? And the answer is, right for Yerushalmi, because the greatest place that we can have the opportunity to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to perform His mitzvahs is in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, as a part of the thanks that we give the Ribbono Shel Olam for giving us Eretz Yisrael, we thank Him also, Al Torascha Shelimad Etanu, because that is such a critical part of everything that we do. Now the problem is, for those of us who live in Chutz La'aretz, we feel very disconnected. We don't feel that we have a part of those opportunities for business on Galuyos La'aretz. And the question is, what is there to do about that? We know that Chafetz Chaim went on a rampage in his lifetime to try to encourage people to learn all of the different mesechtos that are relevant to the mitzvahs on Galuyos La'aretz. It's very interesting. You look in the back of the Gemara, again, for those who just finished the Daf Yomi, I don't know how often when you're learning the Daf, you have the opportunity to look in the back. And even if you're looking in the back, you're probably not learning the Marsha or the Maharam. That's a technical, trying to figure out Shaka Vatari, the Gemara, the Sugya, Toysis, or Rashi. Not so simple. But the Marsha and the Maharam and the Maharshal and so many others wrote commentary, wrote Peirushim on every line, Gemara, Rashi, Toysis, everywhere. And yet, all of a sudden, you come to Kachim. There's no Marsha and there's no Maharam and there's no Maharshal. There's almost no Rishonim. How could it be? What happened? This was not a focus, and it wasn't until later generations that the Achronim, about 100 years ago, decided this is something we really need to focus our attention on. If we plan at some point to go back to Eretz Yisrael, we're going to have to know the laws of Kachim and Tahar Yisrael, and we're going to have to understand all of this. And if there are not enough Rishonim, at least the Chafetz Chaim then went ahead and wrote a Chelek all about the Mitzvot HaTluyos La'aretz, and he wrote a whole interpretation to all of those Gemaras, all those Masechtas that are about the Mitzvot HaTluyos La'aretz and Tumah Tahara, because the Chafetz Chaim understood, if we're not going to know this, then how are we supposed to be able to have the opportunity of going to Eretz Yisrael? When we get there, what are we going to do? So the Chafetz Chaim gives a beautiful mashal in the introduction to his Sefer on Kachim, and he writes, why is it that I find it's important to dedicate my time to write a Sefer about Mitzvot HaTluyos La'aretz? Why? There's plenty of other things to do. He wrote the Shemiras HaLashon, the Mishneh Berurah. Plenty of other things to be busy with. Writes the Mishneh Berurah. The reason why is because Kedimyon HaNisuin. Says, imagine you have a chasana, you have a wedding. When the kala is omedes umekushetes, when the kala is there, and she's all made up in her gown, and she has the jewelry on, and she's all ready to go, and the chasana is just not paying attention. And you wake him up and you say, look, the kala is ready. She's ready to walk down the aisle. Put yourself together. He's going to say, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I'm a little absent-minded sometimes. But now I see the kala is ready for me. Of course, how am I going to delay? Writes the Chafetz Chaim, if we show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we are like that kala, that is dressed up, that is ready, that is prepared for this beautiful experience of this reunification of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Klal Yisrael, then how will the Ribbono Shel Olam say no? Chafetz Chaim says, this will be Makariv de Geula. If we prepare ourselves by learning the Mitzvot HaTluyos La'aretz, by understanding Zrayim Kachim HaTaharas, that will be something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot turn us down for. And this is really written about by all the major Svarim. It's something we need to think about. And maybe if we don't think about it during the year so much, at least we have the opportunity during this time of the year to focus our attention just for a few weeks or a few days or maybe a few hours on how central and how vital Eretz Yisrael is to all of us. In the days of the Vilna Gaon, as we know, the end of the 1700s, the Vilna Gaon really went on a crusade to try to get people, his Talmidim, to move to Eretz Yisrael. Now, what's very famous about the Vilna Gaon is, first of all, why did he get this idea? Everybody was living fine. He was in Vilna. What was the need to go to Eretz Yisrael? Why did he feel it was so important? So the Vilna Gaon had some kind of gematria. It says in the Navi Yeshaya, Berachamim Gedolim Akatzeich. The Navi Yeshaya writes that with tremendous mercy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring you back to Eretz Yisrael. The Vilna Gaon said, oh, that's the gematria Eliyob and Shlomo Zalman. You go work it out at home. And the Vilna Gaon said, oh, obviously it's a remez that Eliyob and Shlomo Zalman, that was the name of the Vilna Gaon, it means that I'm supposed to be the one to get people going back to Eretz Yisrael, and that's going to bring the Geula. Okay, so how the Vilna Gaon came up with this is beyond us. But that's really where it all started. And because of that, he encouraged many, many of his Talmidim. Now, it's interesting that the Vilna Gaon, what's the probably one of the most famous things about the life of the Vilna Gaon? What would you say? His Svarim?
The Gaon story.
What was that?
The story.
The story of the Megillah?
The one where he didn't have the Megillah.
Where he didn't have what?
I forget. It's a story of the Vilna
Gaon. Story of the Vilna Gaon. What would you say? What?
He didn't do the math.
Exactly. What would you say about the Vilna Gaon? He didn't write any Svarim. He didn't make it there. He didn't even make it. But even more famous than that, what would you say is probably the most famous thing that we know about the Vilna Gaon today? What? It's fine with the Hasidim. Again, it was the Machlokas, the Shem Shamayim, and there's a lot to talk about what happened then. We'll come back another time with some you know, Basar V'Yayin here again for another scene. We'll talk about the Vilna Gaon, the Hasidim. It's beautiful. But that was probably the most famous thing, issue that the Vilna Gaon took upon himself, is he was so against the movement of Hasidus at the time, and it was just getting started. The Baal Shem Tov and all of his followers were just getting started. And that was really something that troubled the Vilna Gaon very much. If you look at the Nefesh HaChaim, who was the greatest Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, or Chaim Velazhiner, he also goes on a crusade against the Hasidim. And this was like their life mission, to topple the Hasidus. Now, it was not successful. As we know, Hasidim flourished, and Hasidim lived on, and it's still flourishing today. Maybe the whole dynamics are different today. Obviously, Hasidus today is not what it was 150, 200 years ago. Everything's different. But, be it as it may, I find it fascinating that although he had this nekuda of machlokes with the Hasidim, and he was obviously l'shem shamayim in his beliefs, but what's fascinating is the two people that got the movement to Eretz Yisrael going were the Vilna Gaon and the Baal Shem Tov. Fascinating. The Vilna Gaon and the Baal Shem Tov were the first ones to send people to Eretz Yisrael in the end of the 1700s. The first mission, I believe, went in 18, I'm forgetting exactly the dates, but in the early 1800s, 1808, 1809 or something, they were sent as Talmidim of the Gaon. But they were preceded 20 years earlier or 25 years earlier by the Talmidei HaBaal Shem Tov. And they all came together, and this created a major problem because it's not like they came to Eretz Yisrael and there were so many options of where to live. So you have the Talmidei Agra, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Mishklov was one of the greatest Talmidim of the Gaon. There was a second personality by the name of Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov. He's the author of the, anybody know?
Carbonated?
Nope, close. Pasa Shulchan. So he wrote a few Chalakim, Pasa Shulchan, which is all Mitzvah HaTulis Baretz, because the Vilna Gaon encouraged him to do that. So you have all these Talmidei Agra go to Eretz Yisrael. The problem is, where are they going to go? They need a minion. Right? The Ramban already writes in his time, in the Rishonim, the Ramban writes, when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he couldn't get a minion in Yerushalayim. The Ramban says he came to Yerushalayim, he couldn't get a minion. He had to lay Monday morning, Thursday morning, couldn't get a minion together. And then he says they scrapped together a couple of people, and whatever they got is Shvach HaMaises, there was nobody there, they didn't know anything, they don't know how to read Hebrew. This is what it was. What does the Vilna Gaon send his Talmidim to? He says, go to Eretz Yisrael, you'll find a little community there. What community do they find? There's a small community of Hasidim in Tveria. It was the only place they were. You can't go to Tveria. What are we going to do? We're going to dominate Nusach Svar, Nusach Ari? What are we going to do? It's before the Ariza. What are we going to... Nusach Ari is around? What are we going to do? We can't be a part of this community. So they have this issue. And they first move in there, and then they realize it's not going to work. They move somewhere else. That's when they move to Tzvat. And then they had all the calamities in Tzvat. It wasn't so simple, but it's an interesting history that it happens to be the Talmidei HaBaal Shem Tov and the Talmidei Agra are really what established the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. It's all because of them. And there were not so many people there. I think the third wave of Talmidei Agra who went, at that time they say that there were 600 people, 600 Jews who were living there at the time. 600 people, that was the whole Yishuv. Can you imagine? And this was like celebrated. This was the big news that everybody wanted to be a part of this. But 600 people, that was the whole thing. And now you look today, how many thousands and millions of Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael. It's such a miracle. It's such an unbelievable thing. But for those of us living in Chutz La'aretz, we don't have the opportunity to be Mekayim the Mitzvah HaTeluyos Ba'aretz. Let's just think for a few moments, just to familiarize ourselves, so we should know the words at least. I know that we're a chevra of, a kolel chevra you introduced. Is that what the shul is called, the kolel?
Sure.
So it's a kolel chevra here. They learn, right? It sounds like everybody was making the siyum on the Daf Yomi. So you're all familiar with this. I'm not telling you anything new. But it's important as we go through the Gemara, as we go through the Psukim and Chumash, as our Rabbi said every week, just to understand what are the mitzvot HaTeluyos Ba'aretz. What are we talking about? What are the words? What are the issues that we have to be aware of? So many of us might be aware, I don't know if you shop in Costco, in the five towns by us, everybody goes to Costco. Is there one conveniently located here now? Halavai, you should be zocha. Pomegranate, we should be zocha too, but you should all be zocha to Costco. So they have, if Gourmet Glad hears that, they're going to shoot me. You should just know, hey, Ori, I'm a proud, coward-carrying member of Gourmet Glad. Also, it's okay. Anyway, so the The mitzvah tzluyas baris that we're familiar with is not just once in a while you get an email. Kashrus sends out an email. There's a Trumas and Mises problem. There's a this, some oranges, Jaffa oranges they're selling in Costco and Walmart. Got to be careful. A little bit. But we don't really know what's going on. We don't really understand what it's all about. Do you know how many mitzvahs tzluyas baris there are? Leket, Shikcha, Peya, Heret, Ololos. What are these things? Anybody know what these things are? So some of them are when you have Tevuah. Then we have Shemitah, so we're all familiar with the concept of Shemitah, but what are the halachas of Shemitah? So complicated, so intricate, it's important for us to know. Ma'aser Ani, what is Ma'aser Ani? Every third and sixth year, we're supposed to give, again, we have a seven-year cycle. Seventh year is Shemitah. Machlokas in the Gemara, Machlokas are Rishonim, how exactly do you count that? Do you do 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, and then you have the 49th year is Yovel? 49th year counts as its own year? Or is that a double year? So do you count 49 and 50 and then you start 7 again? That's a major problem today because now we don't really know when Shemitah is because that issue is not resolved. Right? Anybody understand what I'm saying? If you count 7, 7, 7, 49 and then you count a blank year as 50 and you start all over again, then Shemitah is going to be 1 year. If you just keep counting 7, 7, 7, 7 and keep going and the 49th is Yovel, then Shemitah is going to be a different year. And over time, that's really going to cause a problem. So this is part of the issue of Shemitah Bizman Hazeh. We don't really know what it is. Second problem of Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is that we don't have Rov Yoshveha Aleha. We don't have most of the Klal Yisrael living in Eretz Yisrael yet. We're getting close. We're getting pretty close. But most of the Jews in the world do not yet live in Eretz Yisrael. They're saying we're almost at the tipping point. But being that we're not there yet, Shemitah Bizman Hazeh cannot be Da'araisa. That's one of the prerequisites the Gemara says that you need. And we don't yet have that. But Shemitah is an enormous set of halachos. And we have Ma'aser Ani, as we said, the third and the sixth year out of the seven-year cycles. Ma'aser Ani means we're supposed to give 10% of all the produce to the Aniyim. We don't have the opportunity to do that. We live in Chutz La'aretz. 1, 2, 4, and 5, right? So we said 3 and 6 is Ma'aser Ani. 1, 2, 4, and 5 is Ma'aser Sheni. But we don't have the opportunity to give Ma'aser Sheni today. We don't have Beis HaMikdash. We don't have Yushalayim Bibinyana. We don't have all of these great gifts. Bikurim. We can't bring Bikurim. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Neter Revai. Hafrash Haschala, by the way. We're all familiar with Hafrash Haschala, but the truth is, the mitzvah of Hafrash Haschala is Bivoachem El Ha'aretz. It's an Eretz Yisrael. Chala Bizman Hazeh and Chutz La'aretz is only Derabbanan, which is why the Gemara says that because Chala is only Derabbanan and Chutz La'aretz, we have many kulas when it comes to Hafrash Haschala. Things go wrong all the time. We have all kinds of problems. Once I'm on it, I'm just going to take a caveat for a second, just to make sure people aren't sleeping. But I remember, Mamish, like the worst disaster story of Chala you'll ever imagine. So, we got a call 1 year Erev Pesach from somebody who lived in the neighborhood, and he said his wife has this awful minig. What's the minig? It's not her fault. It's what her mother does, her grandmother does, but it's a terrible minig. The minig is that when she's mafresh challah, she puts it into a piece of foil or into a bag or something, and she puts it in the freezer. And Erev Pesach, they take all the challahs from the whole year, all the hafreshes, and they burn it together with the chametz. Sounds nice, right? Sounds nice. Horrible idea. Why? I'll tell you why. Here we are, Erev Pesach. I already did my Sreifas Chametz. We did the Bedika. We're ready to go. And here I am, Erev Pesach. I get a call from this guy. He goes away with his wife to Baltimore for Yantar to his in-laws. And now he's too far away from New York to do anything. He sold his house to a Nachri. And he burnt the little 10 pieces of Chametz that he burnt, whatever he brought along with him to Baltimore. Everything's good. Then he realizes, oh, we forgot all the pieces of Challah. So he asked me, can you go into my house? Because we have this Challah. Now, why do I have to go in? You sold the house to the Goy. What's the answer? He can't sell it. Why can't he sell it? Doesn't belong to him. You're a mafresh challah. The challah doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the kohen now. Problem is, the kohen is not b'tahara b'zman hazeh, so he can't eat it. So we have the minhag to burn the challah today. But the problem is, because you have challah in your reshus, you're going into Pesach, and you are mamish violating by yiroh, by yimatzu daraisa, by having this challah in your freezer. Isn't that an amazing story? I see nobody cares for the story, but it's pretty cool. What? You can't sell it. You don't sell the house. Do you? Rabbi Kiva Eger discusses, do you re-put up your mezuzahs when you come back after Pesach? It's a good shaila. But we don't, right? Why not? Because we don't sell the house. We sell the chametz in the house. Do you kasher all your kelim when you come back? Because if you sell the house, then you're selling all the kelim, and that means you're buying from a goy. What? Selling the house? No, mechir segimah doesn't mean selling a house, not at all. No, I'm just giving you a hard time. I'm sorry. But no, it's not at all. Anyway, don't try this at home. Not a good idea. When you have the challah and you're supposed to burn it, you should burn it. In fact, the Chazon Ish writes in one of his svarim that maybe there's a prohibition to leave it longer. When you have a din of Sreifas Nosa, right, you're supposed to burn something right away. So the Chazanush says he's not sure. Maybe when it comes to Sreifas Chala, you're also supposed to burn it right away, and you don't leave it longer, you don't leave it around. Anyway, bad things can happen when you leave things around. Stamazai in life. When you procrastinate in things, it's never a good thing. So over here also, same thing. You're supposed to do a mitzvah of HaFarashas Chala, and you're supposed to do the Sreifa. So that's what you do. Anyway, here we are. What? I had to go to another community to get the spare key to his house. Erev Pesach, this is what I was busy with. To go get the spare key to his house that somebody else had. I had to go into his house, Erev Pesach after the Zman, and I had to go and take out all of his afreshes and burn them. Yeah. So, what we do for friends, you know? It's okay. Yeah, you got a lot of water. It's not so pushy to get to the ocean, you know?
Really?
Okay. Anyway, so there's a fascinating discussion that we need to think about. Again, we live in Kutzlar. It's, wow, Marina Weiss, this team just gets better and better as we go. This is. I see why everybody's here tonight. They conned you into a shear. What? What's coming next? So one second. How long should I go? The longer I go, you keep bringing out more courses. What? I'll see. Okay. So, see, here's the question. You know, we live in Chutz La'aretz. Maybe we do our best to learn the mitzvahs HaTluyos Ba'aretz. Maybe we learn the Daf Yomi, and we don't skip over those mesechtas. Maybe we try to learn some of the svarim that can teach us about Shemitah. Okay, Neshama Parm Sevasein is the best we can do. Is there more we can do? So I'm sure everybody's aware. You look in any of the local Jewish newspapers and you're well aware of the fact that they have an ad every year around Shemitah time about having the opportunity of a lifetime. What's the opportunity of a lifetime? We're going to, you know, only for, I don't know, a limited price. What is it these days? I didn't see yet.
1,200.
Where are we holding? 1,200? Oh, the rates went up. Inflation. I don't know. Back in the days, it was for $100, we're going to give you a piece of land. You can't buy anything for $100 anymore. So we're going to give you a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael, and then it's going to be considered as if you have been mekayim the mitzvah of Shav Sahar and Shabbos Hashem. Because now you are a farmer, even though you're living in Flatbush, you're living in Marine Park, but you are a farmer, and as a result of that, you bought a chelek in this farm, and you're not working it, so it's as if you have been mekayim the mitzvah of Shemitah. Does that really work or not? Does that really work or not? What? What are you saying? It better? Okay, so I'm not here to make anybody feel bad. If you're already bought into the idea... What? You bought what?
They bought their own farm.
Bought your own farm, so you're doing...
That doesn't work because the material is not the... It doesn't work with either the muscles in the Eretz Yisrael.
Why?
Because you're not allowed to sell land in Eretz Yisrael without permission from the government.
Uh-huh. So the stamas are there are other problems. Technical issues. Okay, I don't know. We got to figure it out. But let's talk on a halachic level. What a plot. Yeah, so I'm not singling anybody out. I just want to talk about the dynamics of this and whether or not it's actually halachically, am I accomplishing anything by doing such a thing? So it's an interesting question. And it really comes down to a very important Gemara Maseches Nazir. I don't know where I am anymore on the sheet. But the Gemara Maseches Nazir writes a fascinating statement where the Gemara says nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael at all, nothing to do with this topic. But the Gemara says, "Kol milsa de'iu la'matzi avid, anything that I am unable to do, shliach la'matzi mashmi, I cannot make a shliach to do in my place either." So for example, the Gemara gives an example. What would happen if you have a Kiddushin Ayidei Shliach? Now the whole idea of Kiddushin Ayidei Shliach is so strange. Imagine a chassan doesn't show up to his own chassan. And he says, okay, you know, I love this woman very much. I really want to marry her, but I'm doing something else. I'm in Hawaii for the week. So let somebody else go and be Mekadosh. It's a strange thing to do. But the Gemara seems to say that this used to happen all the time. That they used to have Kiddushin Ayidei Shliach. Why they did it that way, I don't know. But that's what they used to do every once in a while. And the Gemara says what happens as follows. A guy knows that he's going on a trip, so he decides to be Memana Shliach. What is the shlichus? He says, I want you to be Mekadesh this woman on my behalf. Okay, that works. The Gemara says it works. We have a concept of shlichus. Where do we learn shlichus from? What's the original? What? The Gemara says a kiddushim. We learn shlichus from kein tarimu gamatem, right? I think it's from truma. Yes. Okay. So we're chazering the daf. It's good. We're almost up to it again. So it's important that we understand shlichus is obviously something that works, and it works by all halachic criterion. And yet, here you have a man who's memana shliach. He asked this friend of his to go be mekadosh anisha. Okay, that should work. Problem is, one small problem. What's the problem? She happens to currently be married to someone else. So what do you say? Small problem, big problem, serious problem, right? So what are you going to do? Obviously, he's not able to marry the woman now. She's married to somebody else. He obviously has plans that this woman is going to either get divorced or somehow her husband is not going to be here any longer, and he's going to have the opportunity to marry her. But he's afraid that if that happens, he's not going to be in town. He knows he's going on a business trip for a month, and he knows that whenever this husband is out of the picture, someone is going to get this woman, and he wants to be the one. So what does he do? Stuck. So he's memana shliach. He asks his friend, if this woman becomes available, I hereby appoint you to be mekadosher on my behalf. Does that work or not?
No.
All those who say yes, raise your hands. No one. Why not? Why shouldn't it work? It's not Ba'olam. So the Gemara says the reason why it doesn't work is because right now, would I be able to do that? No, I can't be Mekadosher. She's married. Right? Kiddushin means that I have exclusivity to you. And you don't have the ability to go to somebody else. So she is taken up, so to speak. She can't accept a Kiddushin from somebody else. She already agreed to a Kiddushin of one person. So right now, if he himself were to go to the woman and present himself and say, you know, I really want to marry you, she would say, I'm sorry, but I'm taken. I would love to be married to you also. I can't. So since he can't do it, the Gemara says, he also can't be memana shliach to do it for him. Kal milsa de'iu lamatzi avid, if I myself am not able to do something, I can't be memana shliach in my place to do it either. Now, how far does that concept go? The Dagel Meravava, anybody knows who wrote the Dagel Meravava? It's on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. Nadim Yehuda wrote the Dagel Meravava, which is basically comments here and there on Shulchan Aruch, on the side of the page. Dagel Meravava has a fascinating suffix in Yeruday and Ilchas Pidyon Aven, where he wonders the following. A father has a young child who was just born. The child is, let's say, 8 days old. We just did the Bris Milah, and now the father has to go on a business trip. It was planned months in advance. He has to go away. The problem is he has to do a Pidyon Aven on his son, on Yom Lamed Aleph. When do we do a Pidyon Aven? What? We do it on Yom Lamed Aleph. By the way, we do it on the 31st day. It's after the child is 30 days old. Common mistake. I've been to more than one Pidyon Aven where they got the wrong date. So you gotta check before you arrange for a Pidyon Aven. You have to make sure, get your money back. But anyway, so what happens? This father knows that he's going to be away on the Yom Lamed Aleph. He knows he's going to be away on the Yom Lamed Aleph. But he would love to do the mitzvah Pidyon Aven. So what does he do? He has a chiyuv to be poda his son. So he goes to his next door neighbor and he says, listen, unfortunately I'm going to be away on the Yom Lamed Aleph. I won't be able to do the Pidyon Aven on my own. But I would love if you would step in my place. I'm going to give you the money now. And I want you to be my shliach. Does that work? Let's say he was home on Yom Lamed Aleph. And he's not in the mood to go to the Pidyon Aven. He's not feeling well, whatever. Would he be able to send somebody else to do it?
No.
Why not?
Right now, he's
no, so one second. Let's say he was home on Yom Lamed Aleph. And he wakes up, he's not feeling well, he can't make it. So he asks the next door neighbor, can you go instead of me? Would that work?
Who's the mitzvah? The mitzvah of the kid needs to be paid there. Was it on the father? How does he pay the kid?
Good question. The Acharonim talk about it. Certainly now, when the child is only 30 days old, he can't do it himself. So the chiyuv is certainly on the father now.
Because the kid can't do it. So the chiyuv is on the father.
Correct.
If the father never did it, it becomes a badass. Does he have to do that?
Of course he has to, yeah. It's a shy that we have with Bali Tshuva, actually, every so often. That it never dawns on them that they have to do a Pidyon Aven. But later on in life, they do. If they have the criteria for a Pidyon Aven, you have to be aware. Now, once we're talking about Bali Tshuva, all the Torah is connected, it all makes sense. So when you talk about Bali Tshuva, there are other considerations that are spoken about. Rav Avadia has a number of tshuvas about this in the Yabia Omri, the Chavidas, where he talks about the issue of a pinyan aben can only be done when it's peta recham imo. The problem is sometimes when somebody went through a process of becoming a Bal Tshuva, their past was a little bit complicated and things may have happened. And maybe there was a child or a pregnancy along the way that was terminated that we need to know about. And the question is then, you know, how do we deal with that? So sometimes you have the most committed and sensitive and amazing Bali Tshuva who come to the community and they're so excited they have a baby, they want to make a pinyan aben. Somebody needs to ask the unfortunate and uncomfortable question, like, is this the first child that has come through this mother? That's a very interesting shayla that Rav Avadia discusses, and how far do we need to go? Does somebody actually need to ask that question? Or what if the woman herself knows and never shared it with her husband? She had a relationship in college, she was pregnant, and she didn't want to tell her husband. By the time she met her husband, she was a balas tshuva, she's totally committed, totally firm, she doesn't want to talk about it. Does she have to now disclose that information, kill the whole shalom bayis? He's going to hear about to say, it's a mekach tos, I never wanted to marry a woman who was involved in such things, I don't want to be involved in such a thing myself. How far do we go with that? Anyway, interesting story, but the Dagmar Rava, coming back to where we're up to, Dagmar Rava writes, if on the Yom Lamed Aleph the father is here, and he has the ability to do the pinyan aben, he's just not feeling well, of course he can make a shliach like anything else. Why is that different than making a shliach to be Mekadesh and Isha? It's the same thing. However, if now on day 8, the father is going out of town, and he doesn't want to miss the opportunity, so he goes and he's Memana a shliach on day 8, that when day 31 comes around, he wants him to do the pinyan aben for him, doesn't work. Why? Because I myself wouldn't be able to do it now. Right now, it's premature. I can't do a pinyan aben on Yom Shmini. I have to do pinyan aben on Yom Lamed Aleph. And therefore, since I myself wouldn't be able to do it, how can I be Memana Shliach to do it for me? So that's what the Dagmar Rava discusses. What would you say in that case? And how far do we take this halacha of anything that he is unable to do, maybe a Shliach is not able to do either? There's a fascinating tshuva in the mid 1400s, the Ma'ari Bruna, one of the great Gedolim at the time, had an interesting shayla. He said every so often they used to sell the kibudim in the shul. So they, you know, we come up with gimmicks. So they came up with gimmicks back then also. So they said, you know, they got up once a year. They said, we're going to sell the schus to do whatever it is for the whole year. So somebody bought the schus to do hagva glila for a whole year. All right, it's a big schus. How much did he pay for it? I don't know, but he paid. And it was either that he was going to take the schus, or he can't do hagva glila himself. So he was going to either take it himself or give it to somebody else in the shul, whoever he wanted to. Did you buy that?
How did I buy it?
What?
He buys it every year.
Only once a year?
He buys it for the whole year.
Really? For the whole year? So this is already the Ma'ari Bruna. So this shayla is nogea to you. So the Ma'ari Bruna has an interesting suffix. So he says, what happens? The guy is coming to shul every Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, Mincha, everything. He's there, he's doing his Hagva Glila. Either himself or he's giving it out to someone else. Then, unfortunately, this is not nogea to you. Unfortunately, something happens.
He started giving a daf yomishir.
The case the Ma'ari Bruna says is the guy ends up in the hospital. He can't come to shul anymore. Your case is much better. He started giving a daf yomishir. He can't come to shul. He's davening somewhere else. But he still bought the schus. So is he now able to say that, look, it's my schus. I happen not to be here. So let me hand it off to somebody else. They're not going to have to pay for it. It's my schus. I bought it already. But maybe I should be able to give it to someone else. So the Ma'ari Bruna has a suffix. Maybe we should say this principle goes that far as well. This Kalam the Gemara. Since he's not able to do it physically because technically he's not here, is that also part of this Gemara? Is that what the Gemara means? Or does the Gemara mean no? If on a halakhic level he's unable to do it, so then he can't give it over to someone else. For example, you ask a shliach to be Mekadesh and Isha who's married, so that doesn't work because I can't do it halachically, so therefore the shliach can't be Mumuna either. But over here, it's just on technical grounds. He happens to be in the hospital, or he happens to be giving the Daf Yomishir somewhere else. So technically, he's not here. He's not able to give the schus to himself or to somebody else, but maybe that shouldn't stop him. So that's a big suffix in the Achronim, which is very relevant to this. Why do I mention it? Because in the 1700s, Rav Yonasan Eibishitz was the undisputed Gadol HaDor at the time, and he wrote also a very important pirush on Shulchan Aruch, and the Plesi, he discusses this issue. Yonasan Eibishitz was the Rav in Altoona, Hamburg, Prague, right? He was the chief rabbi of all these major cities, all together. So he was recognized by everyone. Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz writes in the Placey, it was an interesting minhag in his days. Let's read it together. Number Yud here. Kama am she'maisa she'nasnu lefnei chachamim de'ozu le'eretz Yisrael. In his day, they had a couple of Jews who used to travel to Eretz Yisrael. And he says there were great, pious individuals, Hasidim am she'maisa, who lived in Prague and Hamburg. And they had this minhag that they used to send money along with the people traveling to Eretz Yisrael to participate in the mitzvah of Zroah lechayayim v'akeva to a Kohen on their behalf. What in the world does that mean? What does that mean? It's not a carbon issue. When you slaughter an animal, you're supposed to give parts of the animal to a Kohen. The problem with the statement number one is, the Gemara says b'feirush that this is not from the mitzvahs of Tluyos Baaretz. It's the same chiyuv we have in Chutz Laaretz as they have in Eretz Yisrael. So what does this mean? Yonasan Eibeshitz writes, people used to send money to Eretz Yisrael to have the schus to do it in Eretz Yisrael. What does that have to do with Eretz Yisrael? You can do it here. So that's a technical issue. What is this all about? But be it as it may, Yonasan Eibeshitz wonders, does that actually work? I'm not there. So does it help when I send money that somebody in Eretz Yisrael should do something on my behalf if I'm not even there? Maybe that comes back to this call in the Gemara. If I myself am not able to do it because technically I'm not there, maybe that should preclude me from making a shliach to do it on my behalf as well. That's the question that he asks himself. And he ends off and he says, Ani ayisi misupak imahani. And he says, I'm not sure if that really works for the reason that we just described. So, how do we pasken halacha lemaisa? What's the din? So the Chai Adam wrote a sefer also about the mitzvah of tluyos ba'aretz. It's called the Chachmas Adam. And in the Chachmas Adam, he discusses this issue and he says that he doesn't think it's a problem. Those who live in Chutz La'aretz and want to participate in the mitzvah of tluyos ba'aretz should send money. And why can't you have someone in Eretz Yisrael do it on your behalf? It makes sense. Why not? Ah, you're going to say, if I can't do it myself, so nobody else should do it on my behalf either. The answer is no. This is just a technicality. I could jump on a plane and get there. There's nothing really holding me back. It's not similar to the case of a woman who's married, who I'm a mana shliach to be mekadesh. That's not the same at all. That's on halachic grounds you can't do it. Over here we're talking about technicalities in the way. As long as you get the technicality out of the way, it's not a problem at all. So this is a very interesting sugya. And it's not simple at all. I remember two Shemitahs ago, I asked Rav Asher Weiss the first time that I saw all of these ads and I was intrigued by them. I asked him, does this actually work? I knew nothing about this whole background of the sugya. I just said, sounds strange to me. I could live in America, living in the comfort of my own home here, running my business, doing everything, having no amuna bitachon at all. The whole point of Shemitah, I don't mean that. I'm just saying the whole point of Shemitah is I should give up on my business. I'm going to take a year off to learn, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of me. Well, that's like, that's a big deal. The Gemara says that person is, Gibore Kayach, we refer to them. The Psukim say, that farmer was willing to do that is amazing. The Amunah, the Bitachon that they have. And yet, here I am. I can live in America. I can have a full-time job on Wall Street. I can be making $1 million a year or more. And everything's fine. Everything's great. My kids are all set up and everything's going perfectly. And I bought a little land for $100 in Eretz Yisrael. Look at me. I'm a Shemitah observer. I'm a farmer. Come on, that's not what it means. Is that really what Shemitah is about? So I thought it was strange. And at the time, he wrote a letter that he has subsequently printed many times over, but he wrote a letter in response to this question. Does that really work or not? And he gives an opinion about the halachic aspect of it, but I think more important than the halacha is the hashkafa of it. So if you want to look together in the second paragraph here, he says, Amnam, afim nomar diyesh mitzvah. Even if you want to get around all the halachic pitfalls and figure out whether or not this is right or wrong, whether we can do it, or like Rabbi Bergman said, maybe it's an issue of Dina de Malchusa and the Kinyanim. You have a lot of problems that you have to overcome to really do this right. But even if we get over all of that, and even if we figure out how to do it properly with the Kinyanim, Dina de Malchusa, and all the other technical halachic issues that we could potentially face, still, the Etzem, Heyos lo karka beretz Yisrael, shehu mashvis, mikol malkom kar amu chachamim hakolot hi rov ha-maisa v'rachmana liba boy, bizmanenu, we are so excited by quick fixes. I think the most common shot I get during the year is like, I just came back, it was so cute. There were two little boys who were collecting money here for Camp Simcha. Are they still here? Amazing. Good for them. Where are they? I'm the Rav in Camp Simcha. I just came home on Thursday. So I commend their work that they're doing, and it's amazing. But, you know, I always find it fascinating. Here we are in Camp Simcha. We have serious, like, Shilas Chamura's life and death. Chilul Shabbos for Cholim, and not Chilul, but whatever. You got to figure out how to really run an operation like this with 120 campers and 400 staff members all trying to keep Shabbos in a way that they've never kept it before. It's not so simple. And, like, the most common question that I get every summer is, like, I signed up to say nishmas for this chol and for that one. So, like, does it count if I do it twice, if I do it once, and this, and that? I'm like, you know, if only this is what we were busy with, worrying on this campus. But we're so into the quick fixes and the 40 days of this thing and the 30 days of that thing, and I'm going to do the hafrashas challah together, and it's going to be a schus for the other one and this, and I'm not making light of it. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I have no idea. You talk to your local mokubal, and they'll explain it all to you. But be it as it may, I think the point that he makes here is bizmanenu kulam rodfim achar mitzvos kalos. Everybody wants the quick fix. Why? Because it feels good. I say nishmas 40 days in a row. Yeah, the person's going to have a child. Really? I always wonder. Do you think the ribono shel olam is that petty? You think the reason why this person doesn't have a child for the 15 years that they're married is because you didn't say nishmas for 40 days in a row? I don't know. It's hard for me to believe. Hard for me to imagine such a thing. Now again, what is a schus in Shamayim and what's not? I don't know. Everything is a schus for all of us. What?
Why is it the help?
Of course. So we daven, obviously we daven and we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us. But when we get fixated on these things and we believe that this is it, and this is the only thing. You know, I'll give you another example. Last week, I had a therapist in our neighborhood who called me and said, I have a problem. Can you speak to this couple? I said, what's the problem? He said, the couple doesn't have kids already 7 or 8 years. So it's a terrible tzara. When somebody goes through that, shalom neda, we shouldn't have to live through such a thing, but many people suffer and struggle with infertility. And this therapist said that she's helping the wife just psychologically, the trauma that she's going through and the embarrassment and the shame, and it's very difficult for her. But so I said, so where are they holding? So she said, the husband refuses to go for any treatment. Why do you refuse to go for treatment? Because I believe in our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If the Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to have children, he'll give me children. So why should I go for any intervention? Terrible. It's not what we believe in. It's not what the Rishonim say. It's not what the Gemara says. It's not anything. That's not what a Baal B'Tochen does. It's not the way it works at all. I have to say, a Lanzman from Camp Simcha. Nice to see you. So anyway, so here, we get fixated. I'm not saying tefillah doesn't work. I'm not saying Tehillim and Nishma. Of course these things help. Everything's a schus. Everything should be a schus for us. I remember when I was first married. What time do we... I was 9:14. When I was first married, you know, my wife's uncles and aunts live in Borough Park. They're real Hasidim. Bells are Hasidim. So, I know, it's funny. About a month after, whatever, not a month, a couple of months after we got married, one of them was making a bris, and they had called and asked if we would be the kvater. So, you know, everybody knows, it's chus, you'd be a kvater and a bris. So, I was very intrigued. You know, it was the first time after we got married that I was asked to be a kvater. I'm like, okay. I asked them, what time is davening? Oh, you know, Sivish is manim, it starts late. I had Seder. I'm like, what am I going to do? Anyway, I asked my father, what am I supposed to do? So my father said, you should stay in yeshiva. You should stay in yeshiva, you'll learn. I said to him, you know, don't you know, they say that it's a schus for somebody to have children if you serve as a kvater. So he said, whatever schusim you get for being the kvater, you get the same schusim for sitting here and learning the Beis Medrash. It's okay. It's a real litva. So he says, you know, it's okay, you'll get the same schusim. Okay, fine. I ended up not listening to my father because I was like, you know, we just got married, my in-laws wanted us to go, my wife wanted to go, whatever it was. So we ended up going, and I was happy I went. And Lamaisa, 9 months to the day from that bris, was the due date of our first child. So I was really excited when we were ready to tell my parents that we were expecting. I was excited to not only tell them we were expecting, I was excited to add the caveat that it was 9 months to the day. I have tremendous covet for my father, don't misunderstand. But, you know, I was excited to let him know that, you know, a little egg in his face, that, you know, I'm just letting you know this is 9 months to the day of the bris that you told me not to go to. So I went to my father, I said, by the way, you know, we're expecting. He started crying, he was all excited, whatever. I said, I just want to let you know that it's 9 months to the day from that bris that you told me not to go to. He did not flinch. He said, okay. So I'm like, you know, he said, I told you. Had you stayed in yeshiva, you would have had the same thing. What are you so nispoiled about? So, again, we never know what's a schus for us and what's not, but over here, the point is that we're so into the quick fit. It didn't even dawn on me for a second. The schus of Talmud Torah is going to be the same as a kvater on a bris. Like, we don't think about it that way. But of course it's the same. It's much harder to sit and learn a first Seder than it is to go be a Kvater at a Bris. But it's much more exciting to go be a Kvater at a Bris and assume that I can wash my hands and just say, you know, this is it, and it's good. And we forget, V'shochachem, he writes, we forget, Ki ikar shleimus ha'adam. How are we supposed to live life? What gives us shleimus in life? And how do we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's by avodas avoda. It's by overcoming challenges. Va'avodas masa, amida b'nisyonos ha'chayim. It's overcoming the challenges and impediments and facing the difficulty and then having the fortitude and the strength to be the strong people who we are. That's what gives us shleimus in life. And that's really what gives us the complete composite whole that we're supposed to be. So whether or not technically you're going to buy a land in Eretz Yisrael and you're going to actually participate in the mitzvah or not, it's one thing, it's a whole discussion. However, think about what is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from Shemitah. What is the bigger picture here? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to see a person who's willing to give up on everything, throw it all in and say, I'm willing to be a Baal Bitachon, Gibor Rekarach. How many people are willing to do that? And say, I'm going to take off an entire year, I have no idea where it's going to lead me, and yet I'm willing to do it in full and complete faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it's going to work out. That's what Shemitah is all about. Rachman Aliba Boy. Don't convince yourself that you're the one who's doing the real thing. The farmer in Eretz Yisrael, he's the one who should be supported. Send your $100 to him, that he should have an easier time this year. Because he's the one who's really sacrificing. He's the one who's really doing. So again, we spoke about a little bit the technicality of the halacha, whether or not it works or it doesn't work, which is an interesting discussion. But just in general, in terms of the hashkafa overall, it's just an interesting thing to be aware of, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always wants our heart and our soul. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants our involvement in mitzvahs wholeheartedly, and not just taking the quick way out. I'll write a check and I'll just say, I'm part of Shemitah, it's good, I'm participating. There's something so much bigger to the Torah mitzvahs that we observe. There's something so much bigger to the whole context of what the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents and what it's all about. And this is an opportunity for us when it comes to Shemitah to reimagine what life living in Eretz Yisrael would be all about. We see ads every day, and don't get distracted by them. The ads should be there to remind all of us, look what a gift it would be if we lived in Eretz Yisrael next year. Halavai, sheyibana b'mheir v'yamein, we should have the opportunity to live in Eretz Yisrael, to experience what it would mean, v'shavsa ha'aretz, an entire land, an entire community, a whole country, coming together, taking a year off for limud haTorah, to come together to just trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu together, and have the experience that would be so elevating and uplifting for all of us. It's an opportunity for us to remind us of that. Once again, I thank you, Rav Moshe Dov, for the opportunity here. Mazel tov to all the Mesaimim. Shebizarcha lahagdol Torah lahadira, lahaskel masechtos usvar macherim ulesaimim, lilmud ulelamed, lishmar velasos ulekayim, es kol divrei Torah. So it's Mazel tov, everybody.